Right, we are recording. Okay, welcome back to another episode of At the Movies, where, as usual, we are here to discuss going to the movies, why we think that experience is so impactful, blah, 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 blah. You heard that spiel many enough times, so let's just get on with it. Today, it's me and Danielle, and we are going to
what about Melissa? Talk about,
we. Oh, I'm sorry, me and Danielle and Melissa, sorry, I'm sorry.
I'm here. Hi, everyone.
I've already messed this up.
It's okay. This is good. People like this. This is the raw what happens.
Right. So what do we got going on in the movie world at the moment? Anyone have any news? I mean, Christopher Plummer died. That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah. That's really sad.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, not kind of a bummer. It's a very big bummer.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's been some... There was a big New York Post article about how movies are meant to be seen in theaters. And I think that that was really, it was written really well. And it was just, I think it reached, I hope it reached a lot of people.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of, there's a lot of great content out there right now that is in support of why people miss the movie theaters. Like Empire had that great curated article series about filmmakers and their most memorable cinema experiences. You know, this one that the New York Post just did, there's just been a wealth of people writing about how much they miss going to the movies because, yeah, it's obvious. People haven't been able to go to the movies in a while, or at least not the same cinematic experience that they're used to. So it makes sense. People are clamoring for it.
I was on a call this week, and the person I was on the call with, he was saying that there was a lot of talk about how people were saying this was going to be another golden era for Hollywood because people have missed going to the movies so much that people are just craving just getting out and seeing films on the big screen, which is going to kind of open the doors for a lot of really fun experiences in the cinema.
I mean, there are some like statistics that are showing that 2022 and 2023 for out of home entertainment, including movies, is going to skyrocket. I mean, those are just based on predictive models, but I happen to agree with that because I don't know how you guys feel, and then we can wrap this up. But as soon as things kind of normalize and feel safer, I do not plan to be staying home as much as I used to look forward to staying home because I was on the go so much. Now I can't wait to get out and do things. Yeah. So
I'm with you 100%.
That
well,
time will
watching
come.
Things from home. Has anyone watched anything new recently?
Wait, Scott, we have to follow up from last week's episode.
We did. We do because I watched Bliss.
And what did you think compared to what Danielle thought?
Well, I mean, it was okay. It was okay.
He doesn't want to say.
Well, no, it's not that I don't want to say, like, because she asked me what I thought of the movie. And like, I think on Letterboxd, I gave it 2 out of 5 stars. Mainly because like it wasn't as captivating of a story to me, but I think I got what they were throwing out there. I don't think it wasn't as confusing to me, but again, I think the ambiguous filmmaking, it can, you know, meanings can have a universal adapter to them. Like it can mean something to somebody else. What I got out of it was probably something, you know, maybe that wasn't intended, who knows. But yeah, I didn't really buy either of those actors in those roles, Owen Wilson and Selma Hayek. I liked them both. And not to say that their performances were bad, but yeah, I don't buy Owen Wilson as like a drug addict. I just don't. He's too like, oh, you know, oh, shucks. And I'm surprised he didn't go wow in that movie once, because there are so many things that would make you go wow.
And I thought he did though.
And he's known for saying wow in like every movie.
I thought when they went to like the this is the real land, the Greek oasis, whatever, he had a moment where he looked around and was like, wow.
He's like, oh,
I'm
wow.
Like, where are you going?
That is so funny. Well, I'm glad that you had an opportunity to watch it. What did I watch last night? Oh, I watched Up in the Air, just jonesing for some travel. So that was a nice film to watch. And
I love this movie. I watched the new Coming to America.
So jealous.
Yeah. And I watched Judas and the Black Messiah last night.
How was that? Good.
Mm-hmm. I need to go back and watch it again, because towards the end of it, we had like a little interruption, so I didn't get to stay laser focused. And when I watch a movie, I like zero interruptions. Like, do not talk to me. I do not exist. I am on a completely different plane. Don't talk to me. Mm-hmm. That's how I like to watch my movies. And so I want to go back and just be fully immersed into it again. And that I'm not going to acknowledge anything else going on kind of state.
Yeah. And for anyone listening, that comes out this weekend. So obviously yeah. Danielle had a pre-screener, but yeah.
It was good though. And the acting is phenomenal.
Yeah.
The cast is.
I'm excited. I want to see that. Phenomenal. I'd love to see that in a theater. We'll see.
And then the Coming to America, the new one comes out in March, beginning of March. Yeah. And it's funny. It's fun. It's interesting because so I don't know how you guys feel about sequels that come 30 some odd years later. Like, we saw it with The Incredibles, and I thought the next installment was actually really great for The Incredibles franchise. But there's this weird thing, in my opinion, that happens whenever you take an almost like cult classic film like Coming to America, which is so meaningful to so many people because it was one of the first like true love stories, you know, with an all black cast that was a huge global success. You know, it was groundbreaking on so many different levels. And now we get a second one. But, you know, films like that, you hold on to the nostalgia. Like, you have quotes that you revisit over and over again and characters that you've grown up with. And I loved the first Coming to America. In fact, Brandon and I watched it a couple weeks ago again because they had a marathon during Christmas. I think one of the stations literally played it for 24 hours in a row. And so watching the second one, I really enjoyed it, but I found myself, and I thought it was really fun. And I actually thought it was done really well because they leaned into certain things. They didn't try to ignore, you know, some of the classic moments from the first. They really, really tried to marry the two together while bringing the franchise into what's happening in the world today and some of the themes that are really relevant today. So I really enjoyed that. But while I was watching it, I found myself like trying to go back to the first one and like reckoning the first one with now the second one. And so I want to watch it again and just try to not do that and just watch it as a completely independent film. But I do want to see it again already.
Right on. Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet. I mean, that one just came out, right? This weekend?
It's not coming out. No,
it comes out the beginning of March.
Oh, yeah. Beginning of March.
A couple of weeks. And I felt that way about Jumanji, but we have a topic to talk about. I was really nervous about the second Jumanji coming out after so many years. But yeah. I felt like they did a really good job because I loved the original so much. And I love Coming to America original so much. I always get nervous that I don't want them to, you know, just be too cheesy in the second one, I guess. But Scott has a topic for us because we are going into a holiday this weekend, a love holiday, Valentine's Day. And I guess you don't really, ugly crying, it doesn't really correlate maybe with Valentine's Day, but maybe it does. Scott, tell us about this topic a little bit. What do you want to chat about?
Well, we were basically kind of going over all the different experiences you can have in a movie theater and what makes, you know, seeing a movie in a movie theater unique as opposed to watching it at home. And I think a lot of it has to do with the vulnerability you have watching a movie amongst strangers in the dark, you know, with people you don't know. And so it brought to mind the idea of, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact of whenever I would talk to you about, you know, I saw this movie or I saw that movie, you would always respond like, is it going to make me cry? And you had this hesitance of wanting to watch a movie that was going to make you sad amongst other people. And I thought that was a really interesting way of looking at this topic of like, okay, well, why is it that people feel so embarrassed or feel that crying in, you know, a theater amongst other people during emotional scenes, why that's such a big faux pas and why like people feel embarrassed about it. So I figured let's talk about it. And so let's talk about some of the you know, the most memorable cries we've had in a movie theater and what movies they were. You know, I think I have a my most recent list. I think for me, maybe as I'm getting older, I'm getting softer, and like I'm more susceptible to crying. I just embrace it these days. But yeah, I think the last three movies that I could think of where I had like a really good cry in a movie theater amongst other people was The Florida Project. That one messed me up. I was a blubbering mess with the whole thing. Last Black Man in San Francisco, mainly because that one's just such a moving story. And the music has this very, you know, 1960s Sound of Music kind of feel to it. So everything's very optimistic and it just has a very moving feel to it. And then the other one was a documentary called I'm Not Your Negro. Like that one was a hard film to get through. And yeah, lots of tears shed. And I don't really know why, you know, people have this apprehension of wanting to watch movies around other people if they feel like they're going to be emotional. Can anyone maybe, you know, enlighten me as to why people are so embarrassed to cry in front of other people?
I don't know, because I'm a crier. And I had to come to terms with that when I started doing junkets and going to press screenings, because for anyone who hasn't been to a press screenings are a little, like, how do I say this? Drier than just going to the movies, I would say, because it's a room full of people who watch movies for a living all the time. And so the animation, if you will, of actually going to the movies with a group of random people and a movie theater somewhere doesn't necessarily happen, because these are people who are like looking for certain elements in a film and they're trying to really focus and pay attention to certain things that are happening, or like different aspects of filmmaking depend on, you know, which outlet they're covering for. And so it tends to be like just a little more cut and dry as far as audience reaction goes. And so you don't really, it's not as common to have those big emotional reactions. Except for yours truly. Like, I cry in everything. I remember sitting in the audience for the last Toy Story. And it was in a theater at Disney in Orlando. And I was with one of my best friends who had brought along for the junket, because there was some other stuff that, you know, they let us bring a friend or family with us for. And at one point, I am sobbing. This is an animated movie. They're not even real people.
It doesn't matter, because again, fiction is fiction, regardless of whether they're actors or whether they're animated.
When Woody and Buzz had their like moment, I just was bawling like a baby. And my friend, like, she literally hit me and was like, stop it. Because I was crying harder than anyone else in the theater. But I think, you know, for me at least, because you're asking like, what's the deal about crying in front of other people? There's a certain vulnerability that comes with that and just letting yourself express whatever you're feeling. And when I first started, I was kind of scared to do that, because I was scared somebody was going to judge me. Like, why is this chick crying for something that she shouldn't be crying over? But I'm an emotional human being, and I've decided that part of the reason that I love movies and I love going to see a movie is because I get absorbed into whatever story's in front of me. And crying for me is part of that. Like, I want to feel what they're feeling. That's one of the reasons I go to the movies. And so it's almost cathartic now, I think, to just let myself have a good cry about something that is totally irrelevant to my life.
I think that that's amazing. I look up to you. I am the person in the theater, and this is why I, you know, ask people, will that movie make me cry? I'm the person that gets the lump in my throat, like is trying to just not cry. And I think it's because I don't like being vulnerable in front of people. And I'm always was just like this. I'm not a crier type. But there are a few movies that I just couldn't not cry. And I mean, one that sticks out in my, or there's two that specific, actually three that specifically stick out that I've seen in the past couple years.
No, five.
I mean, there's a lot, but, so 5 Feet Apart I showed this as a charity screening for a charity that I'm passionate about for endometriosis because I have the disease. And I read the book, but the film, the ending is different than I got the book from the studio before it was released. And actually Lionsgate was a studio and they were so generous. They gave me a bunch of books to give out at the screening because they had like a pre-version of the book. Well, the ending actually was different in the film than in the book. So I was not prepared for the ending. And so I was hosting this charity screening and I'm in the front row, just like full bawling, like can't breathe because it was so sad. And then Me Before You, I mean, that is just like a classic tearjerker. I went to that film not really knowing what the story was, full crying. And then I was very lucky in 2019, I went to a screening with a bunch of industry people. So it was like 9 or 10 a.m., you know, with a cup of coffee. Well, actually you couldn't have coffee in the theater. And I saw Just Mercy and I didn't really know the background of it. It was months and months and months in advance. So I had just, you know, it was like one of those things, you're at an industry event, you just go to all these films. And I was sitting with my boss, you know, I was just not prepared for what was about to happen and was just a mess. And when I left that auditorium, I'll never forget this moment. Nobody spoke. It was so impactful of a film that like, it was literally silence, hundreds of people. And so yeah, those are just a couple that come top of mind. I mean, there's always the classics like Good Will Hunting, My Girl, Marley and Me. But in the past couple of years, those are the ones that really got me. And I do try to avoid crying, but it happens sometimes.
I cried so hard. Well, by the way, I cried in Just Mercy too. Like that was gut-wrenching. And I actually cried at the end, just a heads up everyone. I cried at the end of Judas and the Black Messiah, the very end of the film. And then they follow up with some actual facts and statistics about what happens. Cause it's based on a true story. And so they follow up with some of the things that actually happened in real life. And they're so unbelievably gut-wrenching. You're like, how does this happen to a human being? Like by the end of it, I was just like, why? I was so sad. And just like, you know, it's one of those, you have to just sit for a moment. But Fault in Our Stars, that movie messed me up. I was crying so hard that one of the managers of the theater that I saw it at literally came in with a box of tissues and tapped me on the shoulder and was like, Danielle, I think you need this. I was like, thank you. I can't stop crying.
Well, actually, we anticipated stuff like that. So at Imagine, when Melissa and I were there, one of the things that we, one of the little marketing things we had that was one of my favorite pieces we had done, mm-hmm. was we gave out free tissues for sad movies that were branded. But they didn't just have our logo on them. They had our favorite movie quotes about crying. So like there was one about... Aww. You know, from A League of Our Own, about there's no crying in baseball. There was one from Terminator 2. What was the other one? Oh, Big Lebowski. Strong men also cry.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's a great idea.
We have a latecomer. I mean, we're wrapping up in 5 minutes, Brandon. So you can chime in if you'd like with the last movie that made you cry or movies.
You don't really cry in movies.
You're on mute, dude.
He's on mute.
I was just listening in. I'm more of a get choked up kind of person.
Like the ball in your throat? That's what I was saying. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But tears, I'm not a big teary guy. But no. I definitely get choked up in movies. And I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head, but anything with kids, anything with father, son, over, out.
Mm-hmm. And like, to me, what I found even recently is like, the older I get, it doesn't take much to make me just like, you know, Niagara Falls, Frankie Angel, like I am full, like I'll watch, you know, those really, you know, clickbaity memes where it's like an emotional story about someone lost their pet in like the hurricane and then they found their pet again after.
No way.
Like, yeah.
Done for. Now, I have a question for everybody. Do you have a movie that you've seen one time and like you literally cannot rewatch it because it like got to you that much. Mine is Bambi. I cannot watch Bambi again. I watched it as a kid and I cried so hard and I was upset for so long that to this day, I cannot get through Bambi.
I don't think so. I don't think there's anything that I'm not willing to reapproach again, because again, I also acknowledge that anytime I digest a movie in any setting, the mood that I'm already in, you know, is either amplified by the experience that I'm having. So if I'm in a good mood, like it might bring my mood down. If I'm in a bad mood, it'll bring it down even more. Mm-hmm. So I think it kind of depends. But no, I don't think there's ever a movie where I was like, I can't watch it again because it was just too sad. Like, you know how many times I've seen Requiem for a Dream? And you know how many times like I've still like balled up on the couch in like the fetal position after I watch it? Like, I'll still watch it. I don't care.
I will never watch that again.
Okay, so that one's yours.
I've got a few. I've got
anything. That's not because it's sad, right? It's just no. Like,
there's I don't like to be disturbed
and upsetting.
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
Yeah.
And that movie is upsetting. And so is The Wrestler. Most of Aronofsky's work is pretty upsetting.
Pretty much anything Scott would watch, I probably wouldn't watch again.
That's not fair.
Joker.
I'm just teasing him.
Joker, saw it once. Great movie. Saw it once. That's.
Can't do that one again. Can you?
I'm trying to think. I definitely know that there are a couple of movies. I don't have them off the top of my head where. Yeah, I don't want to watch it again because I know that I'm going to get choked up, get ugly, cry face.
Yeah. Yeah,
me neither.
Yeah.
Melissa, do you have any off the top of your head?
I mean, I really don't. I would say not because I didn't want to cry. It would be more like me teasing Scott, but like some of the movies that I'm so sensitive, as we always talk about on the podcast, like if it was like harmful for me to watch, then I can't watch it again.
Hmm.
Like in a not a crying way, but in a it messed up my brain
way. Yeah,
I guess maybe I'm just a little bit more masochistic than you.
I don't think you're. Yeah, I well, I do think you're a sensitive person. I think I'm too. Like I can't handle. I don't know. I can't handle the deep, dark things.
That's fair. I mean, it's not everyone's cup of tea.
Mm-hmm. No, and scary movies, but
you still make it sound as if like that's the only stuff that I watch. Like,
no,
I still cried at Homeward Bound, you know, when Shadow came home. Like,
oh my God, that's another one.
What about My Girl? Oh, I can't watch My Girl again. I don't think.
No, absolutely not.
I don't think I cried at My Girl.
Thomas J.
I mean, more or less, just because, like, I mean, it's tragic, you know, having a little boy die, but like, if you remove yourself from that story, it's kind of a funny way to die. He was killed by bees.
Oh my God, Scott, no.
I mean, again, remove the context. Like, it's
Danielle's face.
It's a little more laughable than like than Shadow coming home, you know?
Yeah. Oh, he was allergic.
I know.
Anaphylactic shock is not something to laugh about, sir.
I'm just saying, remove the context and like it's yes, a child dying is always.
You're laughing while you're saying it.
It's well, again, I never felt like I would ever have to preface something like this, that like I need to be clear that child death is wrong and upsetting, but like again, remove the context and it's like, well, how did he die? Bees. Like it's funnier than something else, like, oh, it was like leukemia or something, like
that. Oh my God, we have just gone down a downward spiral. I don't know if
okay, anyone who's ever been, you know, suffered a loss due to bees, I apologize deeply, but
thank you, Scott.
In the context of that movie, it's still kind of funny.
Are there any other movies you can think of where the bee had such an impact?
No.
Well, Bridgerton. It's not a movie, but it's a TV series.
What about The Secret Life of Bees?
Was that about bees, though?
I don't think anybody dies by bees.
Nobody dies of it, but that's a bee story.
It does talk. It has a bee component. It's a good movie. Actually, I read the book. It's very good.
I don't know if it's called The Secret Life of Bees, is it?
I think it is. Yeah. What was that Jerry Seinfeld one with the bee?
That's movie. What I was thinking. The bee movie. The bee there movie. You go. Yeah. That's the one I was thinking of.
Oh, that's the other one you were talking about is a movie or it's just a book. I can't remember. Anyway, Scott, please take us home. We are gone off the rails.
Yeah. Apparently, like, I upset everybody by apparently not being as affected by Macaulay Culkin's death and My Girls, everybody else. Because again, like, I shouldn't go back to it, but we're going to.
No.
That, I mean, that was, it's always such a funny quote to be like, he can't see without his glasses. Like, you know how many times, like, I've used that quote in a humorous context and it's gotten a laugh? Several. Too many.
Dark humor.
I like it.
All right.
I wish everyone have a great rest of your
Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. Go see a movie if you can. If not, go buy some carryout popcorn from your local theater and have a comfortable evening on the couch. Happy Valentine's Day. Please give this podcast 1 star after this episode.
Watch out for bees.